For WMRA News, I'm Dan Easley. An investigation into the chair of the Stanton City School Board, a legal gamble on so-called skill games, artificial intelligence, and seed libraries. This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, April 22nd. The chair of the Stanton City School Board and her twin sister are under investigation after money apparently went missing from the Ware Elementary School PTA. The News Leader reports that the chair's sister is treasurer for the PTA and that they share ownership of a toy store downtown. No criminal charges have been filed, but the investigation is alleging embezzlement, grand larceny, and obtaining money by false pretenses. Virginia's legislature said no to a host of amendments from Governor Glenn Youngkin to a bill legalizing skill games in the Commonwealth. But that didn't end the conversation, and lawmakers agreed to work with the governor to find a more palatable bill. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner spoke with Youngkin and some pro-skill game activists as those negotiations are kicking off.
That's audio from a post on Senator Louise Lucas's X account showing the Portsmouth area elected official being praised by convenience store owners hoping to see skill games legalized. Among those in the crowd is Manir Rusiwala. He has stores in Scottsville, Farmville, and New Kent. And he said some of Youngkin's proposed amendments, like perimeter limits, which would ban skill games within 35 miles of any casino, are untenable.
We have more competition coming into this. Do we get a 35-mile radius from our Buc-ee's? I didn't get a 35-mile radius from our Buc-ee's. You're allowing Buc-ee's because you want those big stores to come in. You want big chains to come in. You're not protecting me.
But Youngkin admitted this week that perimeter rules were among amendments he was willing to negotiate on.
I am willing to sit down and really talk about the perimeter policy and to make sure that it doesn't negatively impact folks.
Rusiwala stressed his willingness to keep rallying for legal skill games at the Capitol after regularly visiting this legislative session. And Senator Aaron Rouse, who sponsored the original skill games bill, said that presence and that support may be helping.
Unless you know how serious and how needed this bill is.
The Virginia legislature returns mid-May for a three-day special session where the skill games effort and the state's budget will all need to be hammered out. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The Federal Aviation Administration says it will investigate an incident late last week at Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport. The agency says a JetBlue flight was starting its takeoff when an air traffic controller told a Southwest flight to cross the same runway, according to the Associated Press. JetBlue says its flight aborted takeoff because of the other aircraft. It will work with federal officials as the event is investigated. Southwest says it's working with the FAA to, quote, fully understand the circumstances of the incident. A Richmond man's victory in the United States Supreme Court is expected to help hundreds of thousands of veterans across the country. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope explains why.
When the United States Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case of Rudisill versus McDonough, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson used a simple analogy to explain the case. Just because military veterans earn the right to wear a red hat does not mean they haven't also earned the right to wear a blue hat. David DePippo is a lawyer who worked on the case, and he says vets should be entitled to all the higher ed benefits they've earned.
Nothing in the statute requires these types of veterans to throw away their red hat or wear it out, if you will, before they can put the blue one on. Instead, they have both hats. They've earned them both.
Timothy McHugh is a lawyer who worked on the case, and he says the Veterans Administration was trying to argue that vets were not able to earn a second hat.
And that flies in the face of the long history of GI Bills since World War II. You know, Congress has always let folks keep and retain and use the one they earned previously and, you know, have the red hat and then later get a blue hat if they want. So that's what I think Justice Jackson was really trying to capture with that very simple analogy.
The justices sided with the Richmond vet in a 6-2 vote, although supporters say they'll continue to watch the Veterans Administration to make sure they pay for all the higher ed benefits that have been earned. I'm Michael Pope.
A state commission okayed an incentive package for Applied Materials, a California-based lithium-ion battery company that could build a factory in Lynchburg. State Senator Mark Peek told Cardinal News the project would bring 100 jobs to the area. Details on the state's financial support, potential timeline, and location of the plant have not been made public. Applied Materials previously received a $100 million grant from the U.S. Department of Energy to support its manufacturing projects. The company currently has a sales and service location in Manassas. U.S. Representative Don Beyer enrolled at George Mason University to learn more about artificial intelligence as the technology continues to develop. Virginia Public Media's Dave Cantor has more.
Beyer's in his fifth term representing a Northern Virginia district, and now he's learning to code, as well as what's ahead for AI. He recently spoke with the Associated Press.
I tend to be an AI optimist. I'm very excited about what it's doing in medicine already, in science, in technologies like management, in supply chain. We're seeing really positive effects everywhere.
Challenges or nefarious uses of AI will persist, and governments need to examine laws governing the technology's use, especially in a presidential election year.
Gender bias, bias based on color or country of origin. We have real concerns about job elimination. And then there are things like hallucinations, you know, bad information.
The European Union recently put in place rules to govern the technology, so Congress is behind. But it has created an AI task force and an AI caucus that includes officials with expertise in the area. Dave Cantor, VPM News.
Inside Richmond's Lewis Ginter Botanical Garden is a library for patrons, but not filled with books. Instead, it's a seed library filled with endless gardening possibilities. With admission to Lewis Ginter, patrons can check out all types of fruit, vegetable, and flower seeds for their own personal gardens.
Tell me a little bit about what exactly a seed library is and Lewis Ginter specifically.
So our seed library lives within the library at Lewis Ginter. The library is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4. It's a circulating collection of seeds. Anyone who comes to the garden can have access to the seed library. So through general admission, you come, you pay and enter the garden. You head to our library, peruse the card catalog. They can search that catalog, find that seed that really inspires them, check it out, and then we're hoping that you're going to go home, plant those seeds, grow that plant, leave it all the way until it starts to create its own seeds, harvest them, and then ideally people would bring those seeds back to the library and return them as a way of perpetuating that resource.
What outreach connections do you have to the community?
The seed library is wonderful because we can take it on the road. We have been at farmers markets, public library programs, schools as well. It's a wonderful way to engage with people in their neighborhoods, where they are, where they visit every day, and give people the opportunity to really kind of spark some excitement for growing plants in their garden.
Is it required that you bring seeds back? Is there a penalty if you don't bring anything back?
We hope that people will bring seeds back, but it is absolutely not a requirement. We really are just trying to inspire people to get out, get their hands dirty, and then ideally they're bringing them back, but absolutely it is not a requirement.
One thing that I thought was a really important connection with our conversation was it is Earth Day and climate change is obviously something we think about and hear about every single day. What have you seen and what are your thoughts on how that's changing and the worries of climate change with planting?
We are planning for climate change at the garden. So it is something that as we are deciding what to plant and what plants will be able to survive in this changing climate, one thing in particular is that as it's getting warmer, that's where we're starting to see the zones change a little bit. And so we're starting to be able to grow things that typically would grow in a warmer, almost you would think of like a more tropical climate. And so that change happens gradually, but it's very real. So it could affect things like our frost state and when you can plant things like vegetables for the coming season without having to worry about them freezing. So there are long-term effects, but there are also kind of seasonal effects as well.
What would be the biggest message you would want to send to people that don't see that as important in today's society?
Gardening is so important. And I think the seed saving aspect of what we do with the seed library is also, it's like that next step. Like gardening in itself, it creates habitat for pollinators where you can grow your own food. We can perpetuate native plants and make sure that we are gardening sustainably. I think one of the most important things is that it helps with preserving genetic biodiversity. And so one way that we really see value in maintaining that biodiversity is by empowering people to save their own seeds and really pass them down from generation to generation.
Kristen Thorman, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much.
If you're in the Harrisonburg area, JMU Libraries also has a seed library with a branch at Massanutten Public Library's main location. For WMRA News, I'm Dan Easley. Thanks for listening.